At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Taxes was waiting around for your taxes to be done, which led to worrying about not getting any money back. Now Taxes is matching with a TurboTax expert who can do your taxes in a day to get you up to $4,000 fast with a refund advance loan. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Expert filing only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Refund advance has $0 loan fees and 0% APR. Refund advance loans may be issued by First Century Bank, N.A. or Web Bank. Terms apply, subject to approval.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast, where we deep dive into the best matches in AEW history. Brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network and your host, Sam Brown.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Match Guide podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. Every episode, alongside a special guest, I take an in-depth look at one of the best matches in AEW history. If you enjoy the show today, you can subscribe or rate it on your podcast app of choice. Support the podcast financially through Red Circle, and make sure you check out all of the other great shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where we cover all aspects of the world of pro wrestling. We've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Art with Chris Things, and Imp's WWE Adventure. You can become part of the Social Suplex community by joining our Discord and check out the awesome match guide and Social Suplex merch on Chopped Tees. Links to all of these things are in the podcast description. My guests for today are Leah, Anne, and Ali, the hosts of the No Facts, All Feelings podcast, Tunnel Talk, and we are talking about Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor versus Miro and Kip Sabian, Arcade Anarchy, from Dynamite on the 31st of March, 2021. Leah, Anne, Ali, welcome to the Match Guide. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So happy to be here.
I'm worried you may force us to access some facts tonight.
Yeah. Describing matches is not
facts
really our
feelings
wheelhouse.
About the past.
Yeah.
Brave to take it on.
Well, we'll do this like it's a commentary desk, and I'm the play-by-play, and then I'll just throw to you guys for the color. It'll work.
That's
perfect. That'll work.
Yeah,
out
that's exactly what we need.
I'd love to hear that. I'd love to be the Taz of this particular podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, though, like to kick off the year, we've been planning this for quite a while, and I was talking to you and like we're trying to work out a date, and the top three investigative journalists of Social Suplex were kind of mum about we might be able to record on this date, but we may have someone else that we need to record with. Congratulations, you guys got the scoop of Social Suplex history with the Young Bucks on your podcast.
Yeah.
And I know that's just been blowing up everywhere. So congratulations on that.
Thanks so much. Yeah, we're a little weird about scheduling with you. Like, we got to apologize.
We had a little bit of a vibe because we were trying to get that interview scheduled, yes. And we had a little bit of a vibe of like, I don't know, like if the Young Bucks tell us they need us to like wake up at 5 a.m. and do an interview on any given day, we'll just have to do that. So we can't really commit to anything.
Was I the only one you put off, or was there like family Christmas plans that you were like, oh, kids, like, or significant other's family, like, maybe we'll do it on the 26th instead of the 24th.
Yeah. My brother and his wife are 8.8 months pregnant, and I did say to him, it would be really inconvenient for me if you had this baby when the Young Bucks are available. If you could just hold on.
If you could coordinate with the Young Bucks to make sure that baby and their availability don't overlap, that would be cool.
Yeah, we need to make sure that does not overlap.
I think we left things pretty, I don't think we had that much stuff that we shockingly don't have a ton of stuff that we're usually scheduling, but it was a funny month for us where we're like, wow, the podcast realm sure is hopping so many things to schedule and so scared of everything that's happening.
Yeah, because we had the Trish and Sarah crossover app,
yeah,
and then we had our own stuff, and then the interview, and then scheduling this, and it was just like, wow, this is somehow a full-time job that we picked up.
Sorry, you've now got a side hustle that you never meant to sign up to. And actually, look, that's a good segue to what I tend to love to ask my guests first time I have them on the podcast, and that is how you guys got into AEW. Now, if I'm correct, you guys got in around 2020 without having ever been interested in wrestling before. So you literally are the mythical casual viewers, yeah, that AEW has built this contract with Warner Bros. Back of. Tell me what, you know, most of us are born into this. We don't choose it. We're born into it. We don't have a choice. How did you guys get into wrestling and why in God's name did you decide to start a podcast about it?
Yes, why indeed.
I think David Bixenban once tweeted that you either get into wrestling when you're 6 years old, or you get into wrestling when you have a huge personal crisis. And we got into it in COVID.
Yeah.
The sort of COVID summer.
Yeah, we really needed something to do, something occupying. And
yeah,
I'll tell you, wrestling is always doing something.
Yeah, and I think we can say our friend Mary had gotten into wrestling fairly recently at the time, and she was interested in, we called it developing her downline. She wanted to get some more people into the product. So she was tempting us at the time,
yeah,
with, you know, various like gift sets and videos being like, does this appeal to you? Does this appeal to you? Can I get you with any of this? And we were really holding out. And then eventually, we saw a little bit of it was when Orange Cassidy did his a shot of brandy, yeah, really was another time, we're going way back, and I watched that and was like, oh, this man is captivated, but I'm quite interested in what he is up to.
Yeah,
and so I, you know, was like, guys, I think we all better get into this together, I don't want to be alone.
Yeah,
and we started watching.
Yeah, and for a long time though, Leah claimed she was incapable of watching video, actually. So
yeah, Leah had a line she was using, and we've been friends for many years, and we knew it wasn't true. She just kept saying, guys, I just can't focus on videos. You know me, when I see a video, I just can't watch it. And we're like, what do you mean?
I still am like that to a certain extent, where like people, very, very, very kind people in our lives will sometimes be like, hey, if you liked X match, you'll like this match, and link it to something. And I'm like, at this time, I'm not accepting video links. So can't click on video. So yeah, that was a hurdle for a little while where I simply was like, and I'll have to click on links and then watch them. But I did start watching Dynamite when my friends made that seem like that was something we're going to start doing. And then it is true that once you just start watching weekly wrestling, suddenly you just start picking things up and you're just in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of other weekly entertainment.
Yeah.
You were kind of just like, your only sources of joy were like, if you were getting a little package in the mail, you know? So,
yeah.
Right. Because like SNL was doing like the stuff from home, like a lot of TV shows weren't filming. There just wasn't a lot going on to escape from. And wrestling is very escapism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was September of 2020. And then I do think that we should shout out, just because it's topical, in December of 2020, I believe, Leah, that was when you entered the BTE vortex.
That's right. So my job closes the week before Christmas and New Year's. And traditionally, I fall into a hole that I can't recover from for most of January. And I decided at some point during that liminal week that I was going to watch every episode of BTE and look for Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor in the background, because, you know, they would just pop in and out of episodes. You couldn't predict it.
Yeah.
And so I was clipping it. And then all of a sudden I was just like, do you know the Bucks are kind of cute? Like, are we talking about them?
And they had no relationship with them, really.
No.
Like, because they were, we watched before that was when they either lost or won to FTR. Now I'm not covering
myself
in glory.
They beat FTR in 2020. That's where they won the championships.
Yes. They beat them. Yes, I knew that the whole time. but I remember us having like no real, we were watching that and we were like, oh, okay, well, that's all right. We don't know what's going on. But then you entered the BTE vortex.
Yeah.
And
yeah. There was a period where we were watching Dynamite, but like we knew the best friends and like then you're kind of catching up on like who all the other characters were. Yeah. So stuff that happened that like fall of 2020, it's like, it's a real crapshoot whether I'll have any recollection of it at all.
Yeah, we didn't know that we would still be here all these years later. No. You know, it was a little passing way to, you know, spend our COVID time.
Yeah.
We didn't know this would happen.
It was supposed to be temporary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the family. You're now here forever. Sorry to say.
Apparently, yeah.
Now, we are actually talking about something that kicked off around about this time that you guys started watching wrestling. We're talking about the Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor versus Miro and Kip Sabian from Arcade Anarchy, of course. You guys have made no secret that you are fans of the Best Friends. That's kind of along with the Young Bucks, sort of your favorite team. Because we are talking about the Best Friends and a program that involves them all, what is it about about those guys particularly that you enjoy? And what are the highlights of sort of their early run in AEW that you just loved, or BTE, because they were big parts of BTE at that point?
I think early on we saw a YouTube compilation called Comedy and Wrestling or something like that. Do you girls remember that?
Was it the one that was actually like, this is what the nature of comedy and wrestling that Dustin gave a little interview for?
Yeah, I think so. And so we just got really invested in the way that like they almost subvert like some of this stuff too, which is like you kind of need that when it's your first, like as an adult getting into wrestling. We're like, do you guys know that this is a very silly sport?
Yeah.
And so I think the Best Friends have always both admitted it was silly while also taking it seriously at the same time, and it was just very, very accessible.
And one thing you do need to, anyone who listens to our podcast knows, we love to say comedy is a core value. So it's like we were never going to get into it unless we were laughing. And they made us laugh. You would laugh at things where you're like, they're doing it kind of seriously. And you would laugh at things they're like, oh, they want us to laugh at that. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And like, they are like real life, really good friends too. And there was a lot of shoot content at that time too. Like they were doing behind the scenes, like Dungeons and Dragons that Brandon Cutler was running, and like on BTE a lot and that kind of stuff. So you could just see them like interacting naturally, which was a lot of fun at the time.
And yeah, they've just got like as a needed it. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. As a group, they've just got fantastic chemistry. Like you can just see it. And it's funny. The ironic thing is that, you know, these guys started off, and I should say a couple things just for the audience. You guys will refer to them as Dustin and Greg throughout, and you are absolutely welcome to. For those who are unaware, that is their real names of Chuck.
Yeah, that was
what they call themselves all the time.
Yes.
What was the article that we loved? Dustin and Greg performed depression.
Depression and anxiety. Yeah, there's it's really good.
Yeah.
It's a very good article, yeah.
Early on when we were trying to shovel content into our faces, we were watching their interview show on High Spots, where they almost exclusively refer to themselves as Dustin and Greg. So we did get into that habit. And I think periodically new listeners to our podcast, they're like, Dustin Rhodes, what's happening?
Yeah, but the irony of the team, of course, and the fact that they've got such great chemistry is that like the whole idea of them being best friends started off as a satirical take, is sarcastic, because they were teamed together in a tag team tournament and they never really met each other, so they just called themselves the Best Friends, and
they also had instant chemistry, so
they worked themselves into a shoot, and just like you guys ended up in a podcast, they ended up in a tag team for the rest of their careers.
So. In a way, we are just like the Best Friends.
Yeah,
so true.
Let's get to the build to this match. it sort of starts in a few different places. The first place I'll bring up is Kip Sabian announcing Miro to be his best friend. So he does at All Out, he teases that he's going to announce who his best man for his wedding with Penelope Ford will be. And on the 11th of September, 2020, he shows up at Dynamite and introduces Miro as the best man. With them both being sort of gamers and streamers, they sort of made sense as an initial team. I'm curious what your first impressions of Miro are and his pairing with Kip. He, of course, was, you know, has a very long history in the WWE and a lot of fans coming in have had high hopes for Miro, but you guys had probably never seen him before. What were your thoughts the first time you saw this big man?
Huge. That man's too big. Whoa. Why are they making him that big?
What a big man. Yeah. I feel like as you watched it, it was like, oh, he's really funny and really weird, which you don't necessarily expect from a big man. But I feel like even initially, like, cause he comes out and does that like beast pose with the like spitting and the, and it is really funny. Although I think that was probably in the range when we were like, is it supposed to be funny or no? And probably was unclear at the time.
It's true that we struggled quite a bit in the early days with like the question of whether we were meant to be taking certain things seriously or not.
It was like, I think him, his video game persona, I think never really like made sense to us, but it was always very compelling how big he is and how much he would throw people around. Even to this day, we're like, That's true. Men are meant to be thrown around by bigger men.
Yeah, early days in AEW, they didn't have a lot of guys that occupy that space. There was sort of Lance Archer, Luchasaurus, Jake Hager, but like no one really thought much of Jake Hager. Lance Archer, I think people liked, but it was clear that they didn't necessarily have the confidence to book him that way, and he wasn't that compelling on the mic. And so I think Miro came in as like there was a lot of potential there, but the sort of pairing him with Kip and making him a video game nerd, I think that wasn't necessarily always going, like it needed to change for it to really click for him, I think. But it was an interesting first pairing. And I do like that there was like immediately an inbuilt storyline for him. Like, you're going to be the best man for this wedding. There's going to be, you know, we're going to do the Bucks party. Maybe we could do like suit shopping. And of course there's going to be a wedding, which is, you know, wrestling's got a sordid history with actual wedding ceremonies, which we'll talk about later.
Well, Sam, we didn't know that at the time. Let me just say that anytime you say like, as you know, no, we didn't.
All of this was brand new. We had never seen anyone do this before. This was all happening us to the very first time. And we were like little children.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know.
Wow. Was that literally, was Miro's first appearance as the best man? Like, that was his first thing coming in? Because that's really funny, actually.
Yeah, it was. Yep. He was introduced as Kip Sabian says, this is going to be my best man. And his first his first entrance music was like saying, this is the best man.
Totally,
it's very funny when you look at.
Having rewatched segments, I'm like, did I ever like him more than this, though? I kind of love him throughout this whole thing.
We had a very funny experience as we were rewatching all this stuff, just being like, did Miro not get a fair shake? Maybe we should bring Miro back. Miro is kind of great.
Then we're talking each other down, so being like, sounds like maybe he's the problem, but at the same time, you gotta admit this is good stuff, Tone.
The really funny thing is my youngest brother, like he watched wrestling growing up, although I never watched it with him or anything, but then he had gotten back into it. And so he had like come back home to visit. And so we watched like a pay-per-view together while he was here. And I'm sure Miro was on it. And I must've said like, oh, I love Miro, you know, or something like that. So then for Christmas that year, he got me a Miro action figure. And I was like, oh, like, thanks. And he was like, oh, I figured you already have like an Orange Cassidy or whatever, but I didn't. Cause like, I'm an adult woman, so I don't have a lot of action figures. So I still to this day have a Miro action figure, which is extremely weird. And in the time since I have procured like an OC and a Chuck Taylor action figures. So basically, like, I have this feud in action figures, which is a weird, weird little thing to revisit. So
I actually think you guys may have liked one of his gimmicks that was in the WWE. He had this thing where he proclaimed that it was going to be Rusev Day because I think he beat Randy Orton or something. And every day was then Rusev Day, and he would have Adrian English, who's a trained opera singer, like do an operatic introduction for him at the start
that's
of his
funny.
Matches.
That's,
he's yeah, like, that's... he is actually, he's a very funny person. It's interesting that like he ended up going down this road of the Redeemer character, which is very serious. There's a bit of tongue in cheek and humor
in it. Kind of funny too,
But he is a guy that has got very, obviously got like very good comedic timing, and it like he thinks up comedic things, and he works in a comedy atmosphere quite well.
Yeah.
And I think he really can read the crowd and like, you know, figure out what he needs to be doing. I think people realize that in the meat match with Hobbs, when like, I think he and Hobbs had a plan, and then the crowd started chanting meat, and you could just see Miro be like, all right, we're doing this now. This is going to go over way better. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
So let's get to the actual feud between the best friends and Miro and Kip. So it kicks off in October in 2020. After the best friends, they're in a match with FTR. Trent hits a spear that is dodged by Cash, and Trent goes right through Kip's arcade machine, which Kip is playing at ringside instead of watching the match. We've all been there. We've all been on our phones in matches, Kip. I feel you.
For sure.
Apparently, it was Kip's favorite arcade machine that he called Alan, and Trent destroyed it. And so that's what kicked off this feud. It goes for nearly 5 months before it's resolved. It's a long old feud. But what are your memories of it? I did not have strong memories of it beyond the wedding. It was like, starts out with some weird thing with video games. There's a wedding at some point, and then they have Arcade Anarchy, but it went for 5 months. It was a long old thing.
It was. This was the first time that we learned that sometimes pacing gets thrown off when someone gets injured, and then they kind of like spin their wheels for a few months waiting for them to come back. So that was a fun little
lesson. I would not have guessed, if you had asked me cold, that this happened as we started watching wrestling. I think I would have said like, we'd probably been watching for a year when that started or something.
Yeah.
But no, this was, we went straight from Mimosa Mayhem into this feud. This was our, you know, our first real experience.
I also don't know that we've realized that it was an extra long feud. I think mm-hmm. later we started like figuring out like how long feuds are supposed to go, because like at this time in our fandom we really were like, I'm watching the show to see if I can like get a glimpse of my faves, and so for them to come in and do a stupid promo against Kip, I was like, great, that's what I watched the show for. It didn't occur to me that they should be doing something else.
We thought this was a normal amount of food to get, and then later we were like, we're being starved though, right? We seem to never get to eat what we want anymore.
I do remember the beginning of the feud where he kicks through the arcade machine. I do remember being a new enough wrestling fan. I was like, guys, that's not an arcade machine. That's cardboard. Does anybody else realize that?
I don't think it's even plugged in. It's just standing in the middle. Yeah.
I don't think
he didn't get electrocuted. I think for me, looking back on it, of course, the reason that it did go so long, as you pointed out, was that Trent got injured in attack, legit injured. He had a torn pec, and they played it off as him getting injured in an attack by Miro and Kip that happened in December. And it did cause him to sort of spin the wheels. But out of that, we did get one interesting thing that delighted me, and I'd forgotten about. When I saw it again, I was immediately brought back, and that is Charles the Butler.
Yeah, that was pretty much key for us. I would not say that was like any kind of like bonus to the feud. It's like, that's the meat.
Yeah,
that's why we remember this.
For sure. Yeah. It got very weird there. Very psychosexual, which is our
crazy
whole thing. Yeah.
There were a couple things going on. I'll just say, like, from the beginning, it turns out, rewatching this, Miro and Kip had a very strange relationship.
Yeah.
It was really difficult to pin down what was going on with these guys.
Yeah, much weirder than I remembered, actually. Yeah. Like, when Miro gets up during the wedding and is like, I am your gift. It was
like, I am your gift. My power is your gift.
My viciousness is your gift. Like, wow, what's going on with you guys?
Yeah.
Yes. So we loved that. And then we loved that, Dustin got drafted.
He lost a match, didn't he?
Miro was like, if I win, you'll be my young boy. And Dustin was like, yeah, anything to stop this conversation. Which is like, I was rewatching, I was like, yeah, that's why we love him. God, that's stupid. That is so dumb to agree to. Look at how big that guy is, Dustin.
And then he got beat so fast.
So bad. With Orange Cassidy on the sidelines, just looking like, and I thought from minute one, I wish this weren't happening. I guess I don't think you should have agreed to it, but you did.
Yeah.
And so
I think it was paying off a thing that was like, they brought it up that back in, I guess, Florida Championship Wrestling, the old NXT, Rusev was Chuck's young boy. And so it was kind of an inversion of that, but
Greg's? No.
Oh, maybe it was the other way around. Greg's. I can't remember.
I think it was Greg's, but then Greg popped his titty. So kind of had to, I could be wrong about this. No, I'm looking at my co-host.
No, because like, Dustin wasn't in.
I think
Florida.
It was Greg.
CW.
I think it came up on commentary in one of the early matches.
Okay.
But that was what they were playing with. So then Dustin was Miro's young boy, Butler, Charles the Butler, and commentary kept. Does one of you want to say the best commentary? I don't want to steal it. Say it.
Excalibur was like, and these are only the humiliations we're seeing. Like, who knows what's going on back at Miro's house? I was like, Excalibur, what do you mean?
We heard that. Excalibur,
come back here. What does that mean?
And
what
we were
doing it for Dustin.
I know this sounds crazy to say, like, when you're like a real, like, full-time wrestling fan, but this was in a stage where we understood that wrestling wasn't real, but also the waters of kayfabe were really murky to us. And so it's not like we thought that Dustin was being like maybe erotically tortured at Miro's house or whatever, but it was kind of like, wait, what are we watching? Why would they say that to us?
It was like, what are they trying to invent? What do they think that sounds like?
That's what we were trying to figure out. We're like, what were we supposed to take away from that comment? Are we supposed to understand that Miro takes Chuck home after every show and erotically humiliates him in his basement? Because that's what I understood, but I don't know if that's what I was supposed to.
That's like some Chekhov's gun stuff, right? Like, said that there was a gun on the wall and no one ever showed, like, exactly. they never actually let it off.
We'll see inside that house and who knows what will be happening.
Yeah, and it was like Miro made Chuck Taylor stand out there in front of everyone and say that to Orange Cassidy's face that Miro was his best friend now in a very humiliating way. And it was very like, humiliations aren't we seeing? I mean,
in prep for this, we were watching, I think it was Layla Hirsch versus Penelope that Miro made Dustin be ringside for. And Dustin really was doing such a good job of just like walking around the ring looking so sad and wet and pathetic.
And Orange Cassidy did some of his best acting in that too. When he had to respond to hearing Miro's my best friend, he really did look like, we've got, something's got to give, because I can never hear that again. This is sick.
He does a very good job at looking like a scolded dog, I'd say.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
Just a sad, sad puppy.
Yeah.
He got kicked. He got told to go back into the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was not having a good month in Miro's sex dungeon. So.
Well, no one was in.
That segues nicely into the wedding. So, of course, the wedding ended up happening on Dynamite. And in the grand tradition of wrestling weddings, it didn't go all to plan, of course. I rewatched this as part of it. I'd completely forgotten about the celebrant, the devil dude.
Yes.
With the craziest eyebrows you've ever seen.
And he's a wrestler. We looked him up and I've already forgotten who he's a wrestling manager. I don't know. We looked him up.
We did look him up. Yeah.
Tony Khan was like single-handedly keeping the independent industry alive at that point. Employing people on Dark and chucking them into spots. So, firstly, before we get into the details of it, what did you guys expect? Because as we were saying beforehand, you guys had never actually seen a wrestling wedding before. Were you expecting to all go to plan, or what were your thoughts?
No, I mean, it's still the only one we've ever seen, I think.
Yeah, do another for us.
Yeah, where are all the weddings?
Miro's first wrestling wedding. Come on. There's plenty out there.
I'm sure we didn't expect it to go according to plan, but I think it was a little bit, but they're not really getting married on Dynamite, right? Like, they're getting married civilly at least somewhere else, which I think is true.
I assume so.
It is. I found out that they were featured in the New York Times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What is it called? Couples.
That's like competitive. The wedding.
Yeah. Well, I think they had a pretty good hook. They were married in a civil ceremony. It said 2 days before the in-ring ceremony.
Okay. I bet the New York Times loved publishing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, at the time, like, I'm sure they didn't have a lot of happy, like, wedding stories that they could do. You know? Like,
it's true. It's the only wedding not getting postponed.
Yeah. Like, February 2021, they're like, give us anything. Oh, a wrestling wedding? Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take that for sure.
New York Times. It's the one and only time they've covered a wrestling wedding.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I think this is another thing where we were like, they can't really be getting married unless they are. Maybe they aren't, probably.
Yeah, I remember, I actually, like, I think I clicked on some, like, weird kayfabe website that, like, was doing, like, articles that did fool me for a minute, because I was reading it and was like, they're legally getting married on Dynamite tonight. And I was like, now how do you think that works? Like, do you think that man is actually ordained? And then it was like, I was like, oh, yeah, the website lies to me. They lied to me, so that's fine.
Maybe we sound like simpletons, but I'm like, I think it's really difficult to get into wrestling and not have a period where you're just like, this isn't real. But in what ways isn't it real? I don't fully understand drawing the line of like what is performance, it's like, and what is just actuality.
Yeah, it's like how at first everyone thinks that it's fake blood, because you're like, wrestling is fake and they're bleeding, so therefore it's fake blood. And then everyone's like, no, they use razor blades. And you're like,
cool. And I think also the thing that I think we've been bitching about for, you know, 5 years now is that, like, wrestling, like, media is just not that interested in the kayfabe. So, like, when you try to have questions about it, they're like, oh, that doesn't matter. We're talking about the demographic and the ratings. Right. And we're like,
and the backstage gossip.
Right. And I'm like, no. I want to know if that man was ordained.
I think he said, by the power vested in me by All Elite Wrestling, or like by Tony Khan or something, where it was like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder what it takes to get ordained in the Church of All Elite Wrestling. Like, what do you have to go through? Is there a course? Is it something that's open to anyone? Like,
Christopher Daniels just flicks a little holy water on you and sends you on your way.
This is what the Scoops Masters on Twitter.com should be getting into. Yeah.
You tell them. Like, you guys have got the best scoop this year so far. So you tell the people who are trying to catch you what they've got to do.
Head of ministerial ordainments at AEW wants to come have a platform on our podcast, you are welcome.
Yeah.
And just shoot us a DM.
Of course, it does not go to plan. There is a very funny speech by Miro at one point. He does note that he's done it a few times. He starts singing "What Is Love, Baby Don't Hurt Me, Me No More."
Yeah,
and the crowd, there's like some fans there, kind of like sitting up in the bleachers at Daly's place, and they get really into that. And Miro, he's got an ear for the crowd, as you guys said earlier.
Yeah, I would have guessed. I mean, you know, work me for the 50th time, but it kind of seemed like that was a little bit unexpected. Like, he said, "What is love?" And the crowd said, "Baby, don't hurt me." And he turned with this delighted look on his face and was like, "Oh, are we doing a bit? I'd love to do a bit with my crowd."
It was really funny. And that was, I think, in this, that was in the era at Daly's Place where if we didn't realize this at the time, because we couldn't keep track of any wrestlers except for like five, but whenever they showed the crowd around the ring, it would be a lot of other wrestlers watching because they were trying to pad out the, you know, numbers. So, so you can see the guns over there, our little pandemic era guns. Really cute.
Yeah.
And but you get like, it's funny because you get like the limited crowds in those instances, and it really wouldn't take much to make a noise that everyone in that whole arena can hear, and that immediately it immediately catches on with the crowd. And then Miro, as you said, his eyes light up because he's been deprived of like true dopamine pops from proper crowds for so long that he's like, oh yes, let's sing along to it.
Does anybody remember, like, when did they start letting the quarter capacity crowd in? Because I feel like it maybe hadn't been that long before.
I don't know.
Oh, it was definitely it was as early as All Out 2020, because like Rich Ladder went to All Out 2020, but it's very small crowds at that point, and everyone's still spaced out, and so there was definitely crowds there. And they would, I think with the Dynamites, they were doing two recordings. They would like got flying in fortnightly and doing a live one and then doing a recording. So they must have had the crowds in for those, and then they did, you know, like staying up to 3 a.m. doing Dark and Dark Elevation and all those sorts of things they were doing at the time.
That wasn't a good time, but in another way, was that not the best?
It was the
time?
Best of times. Yeah. It is now occurring to me that maybe getting the crowds back wasn't good for Miro, for his mind. I think that maybe it was healthy for him to be deprived of those crowds and to just feel like I'm having fun and I'm just being myself. And then he got the crowds, and I think maybe he was like, I'm high. I love this too much. Tony, pay me $1 million. I can never lose.
So you say he was doing all right when he, like just doing, you know, maybe smoking a little bit of drugs, but when he started injecting, that's when the problems happened.
One little joint was okay. Yeah. But when you move on to the harder stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
In the grand tradition of wrestling weddings, it all ends up going tits up for the heels. Charles manages to put some handcuffs, like ankle cuffs. Maybe he took them from the sex dungeon.
Yeah, that makes work you wonder what was happening at Miro's house.
He gets Miro, attaches him to the ring ropes, and Orange Cassidy comes out of the cake to deliver orange punches all round. In the grand tradition of wrestling, of just weddings in general in fiction, you know, you've got from Friends, you've got I've forgotten who Ross ends up trying to have a wedding with, but he says Rachel's name, or
Emily.
There we go, Emily. We've got my Australian viewers and UK fans will be screaming out for Charlene and Shane from Neighbours in the '80s with Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan. Where did this rate for you guys in the grand fictional tradition of weddings on TV?
Wow, what other weddings have I seen? Yeah. Have I ever seen a wedding on TV? Probably.
Yeah.
I feel like I liked it. I think it didn't quite go as hard maybe as I hoped it would be, like, ceremonially at the time. I mean, it's really fun. It was fun to watch back, but I think it was a little more straightforward.
Now, what were you looking for, Ian?
I don't know. I just remember being, like, mildly disappointed at the time, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I was a little shocked rewatching it now. I was like, and nobody went into that cake. He just sort of tossed the cake
came
aside. He came out of cake, but like he just
she went
like,
into it. No, Penelope's face.
Penelope went into it.
Yeah, okay.
Most of it wasn't cake though, so like
She couldn't make that much of a dent. I think I enjoy. I think even watching it, knowing what was going to happen, though, I did have a little. It is very funny to watch it without that much of a crowd, and so it's just kind of like, wow, what's happening here is crazy. Wrestling is crazy. What is this? And this is an art you've devoted your life to. And that's beautiful, but strange. You know, there's a heightened surreality.
It's true. At the time, like, because we'd only watch pandemic era Dynamite. So, like, that felt very natural to us to just have the guns cheering and whatever. But, yeah, watching it back now, it's like, oh, I really have adjusted to crowds because it's like, oh, it's kind of sad not to have like bigger pops for stuff. Like in, during Arcade Anarchy too. It's like, you know, the guns are popping as hard as they can, but they're only two men. So
yeah, I do. I mean, I'll always remember, I think, I don't remember who told the story, but Orange Cassidy said to Jericho during one of their feuds, he was like, is this working? Do you think this is working? Jericho was like, I don't know. I can't tell. We don't have crowds.
It's crazy.
I think for me, it's the worst one that I can remember, the worst wedding that I can remember watching on TV is the How I Met Your Mother one that they based a whole season around.
Oh, my God.
And I loved How I Met Your Mother, but that was that's the worst. It cleared that. It cleared that. But I wouldn't say it had, like, you know, the iconic mix-ups of, say, the Friends one or, you know, the Neighbours one I brought up before. That's just like a piece of Australiana culture that will forever live in, you know, what are they doing now sort of montages that happen on TV around New Year's here in Australia. So it's sort of middle of the pack. There wasn't a whole lot of conflict and stuff out of it beyond, you know, there was just some fun with people getting chucked in cakes and emerging from them afterwards. And
yeah. But then OC and Dustin were really pleased with themselves and poured champagne into each other's mouths afterwards. So for us, that was a good day, you know?
Yeah.
I love a man and he's having a drink on TV. Okay, this was a good wedding.
Yeah, there was a promo after where they were very smugly sitting on a couch, drinking champagne and like toasting themselves. And it's like, yeah, of course. Those are my little sons.
My little sons. You did such a good job ruining that wedding.
Chuck Taylor, he went from being so wet and sad to being so happy and proud of himself.
And he never wants to go back to that dungeon unless he wants to.
So, of course, after the wedding, there has to be some sort of blow off to sort things out and bring things to a resolution after what happened. So they propose and agree to Arcade Anarchy. There are a couple of promos beforehand. Chuck and OC say, we know you're going to come and kick our ass, but turns out we're pretty good at that. I guess it isn't just about how many times you lose in a game, but that you win in the end. And then OC says, Miro, you big Donkey Kong. No, sorry. Chuck says, Miro, you big Donkey Kong looking bastard. And I guess that makes Kip. And then OC says, Donkey Kong Jr. In sort of his iconic way. It really, me saying it does not do it justice because it takes the full delivery from OC to make that point hit.
They're so funny.
Yeah. I believe also in that promo, Dustin looks at, because OC is seated in front of like a little video game and acting like he's playing. And Dustin's like, you didn't even put any quarters in.
Oh, that's right. They're funny.
They're funny.
Indeed. So let's get to the match itself. But before we get to the match, though, I'd like to let the listeners know about the Social Suplex merch line on Chop Tees. So our merch has all been uniquely designed to reflect the colorful characters of each show on the network. We've got One Nation Radio shirts and hats in the design of the Dream Team. Got Keeping It Strong style zip up hoodies. Tunnel Talk Snuggies. Hey, plug it. Imps Adventures, teacup, and my personal favorite is my specially designed match guide shirt and hoodie. The site's owner, Dickie, and I, they're very good. We created it to not just stand out in a sea of bland wrestling designs and wrestling shirts, but to celebrate the AEW 5th anniversary match guide list that we released in 2024. The first 5 years of AEW and the best matches that it's had, it's got those listed out in the style of a Band World Tour t-shirt on the back and the show's logo on the front. But the thing that actually stood out most to me, and I think you guys commented on this as well, is that when I first got my shirt, it was really high quality. We've all had cheap wrestling shirts that stretch and fade after we've only worn and washed them a few times. But these shirts are made from high quality materials, so they don't just look great, but they last. Chop Tees, they ship globally at no extra cost. They've got no tax at checkout, and the first order at the site will be eligible for 10% off. At the Social Suplex, we're all really proud of this collaboration. So head straight to chopped-tees.com/social-suplex and get yourselves some merch that will not just look great, but will help the network. That was chopped-tees.com/social-suplex. Social Suplex, and we thank Chopped Tees for this collaboration.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So as we always do here on the AEW Match Guide, we'll give this match its flowers. For some weird reason, Dave Meltzer never rated this match. Come on, Dave, pick up your act.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not working hard enough.
I didn't like to read that.
Yeah, I was trying to Google.
Doesn't attribute you guys when you do an interview with the Young Bucks. doesn't rate this match.
Terrible.
Did he ever say why he didn't rate it? I don't think we knew enough about Dave Meltzer to care at the time. But
we didn't know anything about Dave Meltzer at the time. And was that maybe a better way to live? Some would say yes.
Yeah, Dave's got a weird thing about pre-recorded matches where he doesn't always – he sometimes rates them but not always because I think he thinks they've been edited. But at the same time, there's, you know, matches on this show that were rated, and there's been other pre-recorded matches that were rated. But, yeah, for some reason he picks and chooses when it comes to pre-recorded matches. It's like a policy that only applies when he feels like it, I guess. Wow, but it is rated on Cage Match as an 8.06. Unfortunately, it didn't make the definitive match guide list that we did for the 5th anniversary, but the original match guide, which we did for the first 2 years of AEW, this one came in 36th. So that was the list covering the first 2 years of the company's existence. So I think it's fair to say it's a match that was well-loved at the time, but hasn't kind of got the legacy and as something like maybe the parking lot brawl, which is, I guess, an equivalent sort of match for it. But it is one that was well-loved and I think is well worth diving into because it does a lot of things. There's a lot of things going on in this match that I think we'll be able to jump into and talk about and dig into. So, of course, there are arcade machines at ringside. There's a prize wall which has weapons all over it. Miro and Kip come out to Miro's music saying, "I'm the best man," which feels very weird given how, like, I don't know, I feel like iconic the Redeemer intro is. Seeing him come out to something different is strange, but it works, I guess, at the time. And then OC and Chuck come out to Where Is My Mind. I think this was the first time that they used that theme song.
It
begs the question. I can't remember it being used before that. I may be wrong, but what is your favorite OC theme? We've got the original that was made by Mikey Ruckus. We've got Jane, and of course, we've got the Pixies here. What are you guys fans of?
I mean, I feel fond of Jane because of the indie history with it, but honestly, like, Where Is My Mind is kind of more fun, I feel like, in the moment. Like, when they brought it back, I really popped for it.
Yeah, I like them both, but I'm a Where Is My Mind girl because I love the song too. So
yeah.
I do think it works better as a wrestling theme.
But I like that he has them both in his back pocket because there's for different moods, different songs for different moods.
And Tony Khan loves to buy him expensive musical cues, which
as
I think
he
is
should.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the kind of employee relationship you like to hear about.
Leah, interesting you say. I think that Where Is My Mind is a better song just outright, but if I was to pick an entrance theme, I think Jane with like the for an actual wrestling entrance theme with the way the guitar and the piano sort of plays and the way they synced it up with the lights, I really like that. So that's my personal pick, but obviously you can't go too wrong with the Pixies. That's an incredible song and it makes a great entrance theme for OC, particularly when he's feeling, you know, it was good at this point, but also now he's brought it back when he's feeling a little bit more conflicted, wants to have a little bit of a different tone to what's going on. So yeah, got them both in the back pocket. So, or should say in the backpack when it comes to OC.
Yeah.
although pockets and backpack at this point. I mean, this man's coming out with everything. Swiss Army knife of gimmicks. they immediately charge at Miro and Kip, and it just starts brawling. Miro, he's dominating in the ring, but OC manages to smash Kip's head through the sign for the whack-a-mole game and then gets the whack-a-mole mallet and just starts hitting him before Miro also comes down and just smashes through OC. So early on, the thing that's being set is, and that's being set up for this match, is that Miro is completely unstoppable, but Kip can be beaten. What did you guys think of like the just the introduction and the first few moments of this match and how it sort of set things up?
I mean, Miro does look like such a beast in this. I mean, he makes Chuck Taylor look small, like OC is small, you know, but Chuck Taylor's pretty reasonably tall and stuff, but he was like throwing him around. I was like, oh, Miro really is a classic big man in a way that we don't really see enough of. And it was super fun.
Yeah, the aesthetic of the whole group was a real early example of what we call the relative sizes of men, where you think you know the size of a man, but then you see him next to another man and you think, I don't know what I know, actually. I think I loved the wall of prizes and like the amount of stuff that they had set up. It was like, oh shit, we're doing a lot here, which I approve of.
I agree, but I also think it's like classic AEW where some things were so lovingly rendered and like clearly took a lot of time and money and effort. And then it was like the prizes, like how many tickets they cost was like handwritten on post-it notes. like it was so funny. The jump in quality of various parts of the props cracked us up.
Yeah. I know. Well, and I think like Best Friends had like just gone to like Walmart and bought a lot of the props. Like they bought the Legos and stuff, I seem to remember. So, and I feel like they might have just like handwritten those signs themselves too, which is like extremely funny.
I think I said while rewatching it this time that the like disparity between like some of the stuff is done and some of the stuff is like not as done. It was a little bit like your mom comes into your room and is like, I'm sorry, what are you doing here? Your project is due when? Your project is due tomorrow? Michael's is closed. You know that, right?
But I like the interactions around
energy.
Yeah, I like the the interactions around the whack-a-mole. It's just like such a classic arcade machine, and it fits perfectly in like this sort of weird heightened wrestling aesthetic. And of course, if you were to walk into an arcade machine, into an arcade, and be like, what in this place am I going to use as a weapon? Like pretty quickly, you're going to come up with, oh, there's a giant hammer there, so I'm going to whack it. And that's actually, so OC and Chuck managed to get back on top when they double team Miro. So Chuck comes off the arcade machine and they just sort of lay into him with those weapons and they pile up like guardrails, and then they just throw the whole whack-a-mole machine on top of him.
Yeah.
Best Friends are really fun because they, I feel like they're always really creative in these kind of plunder matches. Like I haven't seen someone buried under a pile of like barricades and arcade, you know, machines before or since, you know, so that's like, fun.
And this was the match that at one point Dustin on his Twitch stream or whatever was like, oh yeah, we had so much fun planning that out. OC and I just like got drunk with a whiteboard and then like woke up in the morning with like a picture of, and we were like, what is this? Am I making that story up? I don't
know. No, that's absolutely true. Yeah. And it's so like the match does seem like it would have been really fun to put together. Like those kind of spots, like, they clearly had a blast doing it, and Miro got to look so strong as he it took all of that plunder to, you know, keep him down.
I did think it was funny though, because they go to like pin him under the pile of stuff, and then but like Kip breaks it up, and then, you know, they just go on, but no one, he's under the pile of stuff for like 10 more minutes and nobody goes back to try to pin him while he's still like stunned under. I mean, this is just like classic wrestling, you know, but it's like, guys, like, one of you could beat up Kip, and then
you got him.
It's done.
I did want to ask about a very specific weapon, which you guys sort of mentioned before. So Kip sort of, after they've thrown everything onto on top of Miro. Kip kind of comes back into the match by kicking OC through the prize wall that we mentioned was so lovingly created. but Chuck grabs a teddy bear that was on the prize wall, brings it to the center of the ring, opens it up, and pours out Lego. He tries to put Kip onto them, but is countered. And then there's a power bomb from the turnbuckle onto the Lego. When you guys first got into wrestling and learned they used weapons, I'm sure that came fairly early on into you being wrestling. Someone got a chair out or something, I'm sure, and you're like, oh, they do this here, do they? Did you ever think like a Lego in a teddy bear is something that you would be seeing on screen within, you know, 6 months, 9 months of starting?
I don't think I thought I'd see most of what I've seen in wrestling. To be perfectly frank with you, if you've lived your life without wrestling, everything you encounter once you enter this space is a new shock.
Yeah.
I think by this point we had seen enough like thumbtacks to understand that it was a play on the thumbtacks though. So, you know, so we got there and it was a real funny thing to do. I mean, in terms of just like stepping on a Lego sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Justin also said on his Twitch stream that he regretted it. Like it was one of his ideas and he regretted it so much because it hurt so much worse than the tacks. And he's like, never again. I'll never do that again.
Because tacks actually aren't very structurally stable. Like a tack can be crushed as easily as it can actually spike you. I mean I'm not a doctor because I have never been thumbtacked, but
you've never been powerbombed onto
thumbtacks yet.
But I can, life is surprising, there's still time.
I can see that you'd get, there'd be a certain amount of pain, but a lot of them you're just squashing, whereas you can't squash a Lego. Any parent can tell you that, I believe.
The father of a six-year-old.
Did this resonate with you, Sam?
Yeah. Look, the father of a six-year-old who's definitely stepped on Lego while walking to the loo in the middle of the night. They are very hard. They've got very sharp edges, and they don't. Yeah, as you said, you can't just squish one down. And like even a thumbtack, you know, like if it just slides in, I mean, I'm sure that hurts, but you know, it's in there now. Like whereas Lego, you get back up and Yeah,
it's much more like a needle versus like a knife stabbing you, I feel like, you know, in terms of like pain level.
So after the Lego, OC is nearly able to get a three count on Kip, but ref Aubrey is pulled out of the ring by Penelope Ford, who's a difference maker at ringside. She then kicks Orange in the crutch. Horrible, but Orange refuses to fight back. Instead, he sort of walks towards the claw machine, which is conveniently the ringside. And who should pop up from the prizes but Chris Statlander, returning from injury. Chris shoves the plexiglass in Penelope's face. She slams Penelope through a table at ringside. A really fun return here and a really fun way for them to counter and take out Penelope, I think.
And this was the move that, like, Penelope's lipstick somehow like made a perfect print on the glass, right? So like the next day they were posting pictures of it and it was like absolutely lip print perfect. What a shot.
She really threw that glass out. I think also like you sort of think like, oh, like movie magic or something. But then afterwards, Chris was like, yeah, I was just like crouched down in the stuffed animals for like the whole match, which is like, I don't know what I thought they were doing, but it makes sense. Yeah.
I think she said even that she had gotten in there a little early while they were still like planning that. She was like, I was straight up like crouching for a whole like hour.
I don't think I'd be ready to fight after that.
No.
And actually, I would have knocked the thing. I mean, I would be squirming. I would be.
Yeah, I would have fallen. Yeah.
I'm not cut out for that.
Did she have like an earpiece in? How did she know when to stand up? She must have, right?
I was just thinking about that because the timing was perfect.
It was really perfect. Yeah.
When people are under the ring, they have a monitor down there. I think we've seen that. I think we saw this on BTE, so they can kind of see what's going on. Maybe she had a little monitor in there.
That'd be so cute. Just stuffed animals all over her and her
just
her
watching
TV.
Oh, wrestling is so silly.
By now, Miro, he's kind of crawled out from under everything that was piled off him, and he's laying waste to everyone again. He chucks a chair. He chucks a chair at OC and then he kind of leaves Chuck laying down as well. And then there's this beautiful shot. And I don't think, like, I don't think AEW gets enough credit for some of the stuff that they did, but particularly at Daly's place, they just knew it so well. Yeah. And they were able to just create some really good looking stuff there. Like, the word cinematic is overused, but there's this shot actually is genuinely like something you would see in a movie. You've got them crawling up the ramp at Daly's place. And then in the night, you just see some lights flick on in the distance, driving towards, and who should arrive but Trent's mum, Sue, in her van with a returning Trent in the back. It's a beautiful, beautiful shot, and the best friends are reunited.
Yeah. I believe while it originally was airing and when we rewatched it, popped the whole time. Just screaming and hollering.
Yeah. This was one where it was like, oh, I wish they'd had a full crowd for this, because like the pop I was doing in my home for Sue, you know.
I was hooting and hollering.
Yeah, it rocked. It also was quite funny. I mean, it's like, it was a little bit at the beginning of the shot. Dustin and OC, it's like, boys, where are you going? How do you think it's going to work out for you? And then actually when Greg gets out of the car and puts his arms around him and turns him around, that's his vibe too. He's just like, oh, boys, come on, we got this one. Hey, come on, boys.
Let's go back to the ring, guys.
Let's give it one more shot, okay, buddies?
Even just, I love just, it's like this sweeping camera shot that it starts behind them and then the van obviously comes towards them, and then they sweep up and they reveal Sue, and then it shoots, and then it shoots. You see the door opens, and there's Trent. It's, I don't know. I just think it's really well done. And it reminded me of how well they did things at Daly's place. I also think of like the Bucks super kicking the blade up an escalator at some point, and how he just like slowly escalates up away from them. And there was all sorts of things that they were able to do because they just had full run of the place that, you know, it doesn't necessarily work quite as well when you've got a full arena. Like it is, you know, the pop would have been massive. But, you know, I think of when Trent returned again later on, I think it was in 2023, maybe, after he'd had the neck surgery. And it was a great shot and he was standing there. He looked very pumped up, but they weren't able to do, you know, quite the same level of reveal that they're able to do just because they have this place and they've got the run of it and they can just do whatever they want. And they know it so well that they know how to set these things up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, Trent loves to kind of ruin a best friend's storyline by getting hurt, I tell you.
Reggie, every day we despair. We love you so much, but I wish that you'd get that body working good.
It's so fun to see how over Sue is too. Like, she had her big Wembley moment, which is so fun that she got to. A very funny idea to have your mom driving you to the ring is like,
yeah, that's why we're best friends, fans.
Absolutely.
It's so fun. And the fact that it's like, it's a faction where they will do the kind of thing where it's like, oh, we've introduced a new character that you're going to see sometimes and you're going to love her and she's always going to be funny. It's like, that's why I like you. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it was around this time too, is when she was like a character on BTE almost joining the Dark Order.
Yeah.
Like that was right. Yeah. That's definitely the stuff that like really got us.
I know. It was BTE was so helpful for us.
Miss it. And it's very funny too that they were like, yeah, like a lot of other people were like kept driving up to the ring like in cool cars and stuff. So we thought it'd be funny to get Trent's mom to do it. It's like, that is kind of a burn on everyone trying to do a cool guy thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Man, they fucking rock.
Right, yeah. Mox is driving around in his truck, but not nearly as cool as Sue in her minivan.
Get your real mom out there, Mox.
I'm like, you know what? I bet the people in the bed of that truck maybe sometimes wish it were a minivan. When you're driving around the dirt flats getting dirt in your face, you might think like, wow, couldn't have invested in a minivan, John.
Especially Pac, who's always, his hair's always wet.
Oh my God.
And he's wearing his full ring gear. Like,
yeah,
he's gonna get very dirty. Nest by the end of
it. His hair must be caked in mud. I never thought about it. Wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm thinking of like real mums in wrestling, and I think of Nick Wayne. Like, the poor bloke, he's like 20 years old. He's like young, hot. He probably wants to go and mingle, but his mum's just always there. And
yeah.
It's just part of the act. He can't escape it.
Yeah. It's so funny to be like Nick Wayne and getting the dream of a lifetime. You're signed to a major contract. You get to be on TV regularly.
Get money.
But the monkey's paw curls, and his mom has to be there for every part of it.
Yeah. That's why it's so important to ask yourself before offering your mom an opportunity, is my mom the kind of mom who could get super over? Wait a second.
Have you guys thought that about your own mom? Like, would my mom get over? I don't know.
My mom would get over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Worried. Your mom was prom queen. Yeah.
Oh, well, not even because of that. She would say things that would get her over. Yeah.
Of course, everyone is back. We'll get back to the match. The three friends are united and they charge at Miro, who does manage to overcome them at first. But when he goes for Sue, it's too much for Trent to take. And they're able to finally take him out, spearing him into a table. And then this leaves Kip alone on the stage. Chuck picks him up, slams him through a double stack of tables at the edge that's kind of off the stage at Daly's place. And there's a double stack of tables there. Huge finish, huge spot to finish it all off. And then Dynamite goes off the air with "Where Is My Mind" blaring. The best friends embrace in the ring. They get the first zoom. Then we get Chris Statlander coming in for another hug. They get the double zoom out in their hug. Mm-hmm. It's like such a wholesome ending to Dynamite. What did you guys think of the ending there?
I think I cried, actually. Probably. I was so emotional. But then when Chris got called up for the hug and she was in the center, I was really emotional. Like, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was such a cinematic ending with them, like Greg up on the ropes and they're all doing the thumbs up and Sue's out there. And watching it back this time, I was like, I missed the hug. We don't get to see any of this anymore.
We used to have everything.
We used to have so much.
I had a pretty intense feeling of like, oh, shit, yeah, I want this. I miss this. I do want to restore the feeling. This is the feeling, Tony.
Yeah, we talked about our podcast was going to turn into one of those grifting podcasts that are just like, we got to go back to 2021. We just got to go.
It's so funny, too, because like I like scroll, you know, was going through to find all the promos over the 5 months or whatever. So like, as I was doing it, I was, you know, seeing like the rest of the card and being like, wow, there's a lot of mediocre stuff back here in 2020 and 2021. But on the other hand, I got to see best friends a lot. So yeah. It's an interesting dynamic.
The lows were mid, but the highs were high. Something like that.
Yeah.
One of my early guests on the podcast, Chuck from the This Is Awesome podcast, we looked at a very, well, not a totally different match, but a very different vibe for a match, which was Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, the exploding barbed wire death match that they had. And Chuck proposed that the thesis for early AW is that it's nice to have friends. And I think that this match really adds to that theory, because really the whole point of the match is that these guys need to be able to team up to win. Like it starts off with they're separate, and sure, OC can take out Kip, but they can't take out Miro. The only success they have with Miro is when they take him on as a team. And the only way they're able to win is when they're all finally reunited together. And then that's when they can finally win. And I just love that as a, like a story to the match. It's very simple, but it's so well done. And it's very well structured to build to that, because you have that initial spot where they're separate, they get beaten, then they come together and they're able to take out Miro. But then there's another thing, and it's like, oh, now Penelope's the problem. How do we combat her? Oh, Chris comes in now. It's like they have to keep building this gang together to combat the evil foe.
It was a bit of a funny zag, I will say, it was rocked when Chris came back, but also to do it right after the OC Penelope spot. And OC actually does that spot with women and Matt Jackson quite a lot, where it's like, oh, I'd love to hit you, but I know I'd get in so much trouble if I did. And this was early enough in watching AEW that we were still like, yeah, I think a man and a woman could fight on this show one day. We didn't realize that that was a pipe dream. That was never going to happen for us. We were like, I think they could. And OC had kind of played the Penelope role in his own fashion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before Trent got hurt, there was multiple promos and spots that paired it off as Miro and Kip against Trent and Chuck, and then OC would pair up against Penelope, and you'd be like, yeah, the girlfriends.
Yeah, they're blonde. They have their blonde girlfriends.
They're blonde.
Yeah.
They're pretty blonde girlfriends. Yeah.
And the pretty blonde girlfriends will fight one day. And then Chris came back, which was awesome. And we were like, oh right. We're not. Oh yeah, you're not allowed to do that. Okay, right. Yeah,
we don't live in that society yet.
We didn't get a girl in here.
It is so true that early AEW really was like hit friendship really hard. Like it even did, yeah. You know, the Hangman and Dark Order storylines, like everything the Elite were doing. I do miss that. I mean, there's even, God, facts, even like so.
Now we get yelled at for liking friendship. Don't you feel like in the past 2 years there's been an uptick of people being like, girls, friendship is sucks. We should be seeing some graps.
Yeah,
we're probably just so, more aware of it.
People were so mean about like the Elite reunion, and then like, I mean, to be clear, bro, Chacho's went very badly, and no
it
one's
did. Yeah, but
no
we liked the beginning of it.
We liked the beginning of it.
It's okay for us
it.
To say that.
Yeah, and at the beginning, before it all went bad, people kept saying like, "I don't want to see men having friendships," and I was like, "Well, I sort of think so, based on some of your behaviors, you need to have that model."
I know.
For you.
It's like, oh, because you don't have any.
Keep hearing about this male loneliness crisis. Like, maybe you should embrace some friendships.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like even there's different kinds of friendships, right? And very different, like different tones of it, you know, because we were talking about the Kenny Omega and John Moxley exploding barbed wire death match. And the friendship in that is that John Moxley goes into it as a lone wolf. He gets beaten because he's got no friends. And then at the end, Eddie comes in, who is his friend that redeems himself by trying to save him. Unfortunately, the pyro didn't necessarily hit at the end, but you got that. But there's lots of other examples as well. I even think of this match is almost similar to there's a match that the Young Bucks and Eddie and Mox have at Double or Nothing 2021, where it's literally like these two individuals are way more powerful than the Young Bucks, but because the Young Bucks are a team and they're brothers, they work together and they just constantly manage to overcome that way. I don't know. I really like it as a trope in wrestling. I think it's great. And the way this match, I'd forgotten it, but the way this match is structured just so neatly builds to that idea of like, this is the gang needs to get together, and then when the gang is together, they will win. And it's even similar to Stadium Stampede in that way, in terms of like how the Elite have to unite together to win that match.
I definitely think there was like a philosophy that is no longer in place, where like tag teams that have known each other a very long time and have worked together for a long time are powerful. Like they have a power that a recent tag team has to work to develop. And it's like, now the tag team is just, the division's just mega disrespected, and any two people could win anything. Who cares?
But we still hold those values
dear.
And when we
them.
See two men who don't know each other very well killing it as a tag team, we say, time out. I need just. I gotta see you in my corner. Something weird is going on here.
Well, that's why FTR are so good, right? Like they've FTR have got
Sam,
so much history. Sam, together.
Sam,
that's why they're so good.
Sam,
Sam,
you can't say that to us.
We're getting along so well.
Chuck Taylor got to get the pin in this match. Can we point that out? He never gets
that
the
was
pin.
Huge.
Yeah. He that's always takes the pin. So.
So let's move on to sort of the wash up after this. There's not a lot to say really about Miro and Kip in the weeks after they would split up, when Miro would blame Kip for having him lose his killer edge. And then he would sort of really radically change his character and become the Redeemer and get the presentation that I think was probably his most acclaimed singles run that he's had. Real quickly, what did you guys think of the Redeemer character?
So I think we loved it for a while.
Yeah, we thought it was so funny. He kept talking about pleasuring his wife.
Yeah, a lot of hot wife stuff and a lot of like fighting God stuff and just like weird sacrilegious stuff.
He was having like an intense relationship where he was like, I am God's champion. And then he was like, or am I God? Yeah. I might be God. And I
was or is God abusing me?
It was philosophical. It was theological. Yeah. It challenged us. It excited us.
And I think the Eddie feud, we thought it was great because, like, to have this character who is, like, saying all these absolutely bizarre, dramatic, theatrical things, and then for Eddie to just go redeem these nuts. Like, amazing.
That's our very
first season of True Detective, if you think about it, the vibe.
Let's be honest. I brought you guys here to talk about the best friends. So let's talk about the best friends. Cause like they're a team that came, they were very early to sign on with, AEW. And I think they played a really important role in AEW early on. But after this, they would really become background players in AEW. We were talking beforehand that like, what was the next feud that these guys had? What was the next proper program? And the answer really is like when they split up in 2024, years later, that really sort of become, there was factors in that with injuries and things, but they really became backup for OC most prominently. They were part of, you know, Trios Championship things, and they were, you know, always in the mix a little bit, but they were never really a featured program. They never really had a featured program for years afterwards. What were your thoughts around that? Like, I can't imagine that was, you know, what you guys thought would happen to them heading out of this.
Well, Sam, imagine a long, slow scream that's slowly filling your entire mind until your ears begin to ring. That's what it was like for us.
Yes.
We started our podcast like right before this feud ended.
During it, like two
weeks before the Arcade Anarchy. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, what did come out of, like, there was one podcast that we were obsessed with listening to called Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling. And
we still love Marty and Sarah.
We still love Marty and Sarah. But they didn't really talk about best friends that much. And in this feud, we were excited. We were like, they're going to say something about best friends. We're going to get to hear it. And Sarah was like, Chuck Taylor's got to get a new suit. And then they moved on. And we were like, and I'm pretty sure we were like, we have to start a podcast so that at least one voice is out there saying Chuck Taylor's doing a good job. So we started a podcast, and then it's like, we never saw Chuck Taylor again. So
I really think they could have leaned into these guys more when the Young Bucks were champions. Like, and in some ways, they were almost replaced as like the wholesome mid-card stable by the Dark Order in 2021. Like, there's an alternate universe where instead of going to the Dark Order, Hangman goes and becomes part of the best friends. Like, that would have worked, right? Like, that would have been almost an immediate copy paste. It would have been slightly different, right? But
I wouldn't have worked because canonically on BTE, they were ogling his dick in the locker room all the time.
I don't know if they would have been emotionally supportive enough. Yeah.
I mean, Hangman and the Dark Order was just so emotionally satisfying. And I don't know that Justin and Greg could have held that together in the same way.
Oh, but you think OC would have managed it?
Well, he gets away with more because he doesn't talk. So
you just don't think they would have been earnest enough for that?
Yeah.
They have a problem with sincerity, but like, I think they could have done something else. You know what I mean? Like, they're still mega creative guys. And if Hangman's involved, like, I think they could have come up with a different story. And God, I sort of wish I was in the universe where I could get a glimpse of what they would have come up with.
Yeah. I'd love to go review the archives and discover, like, I know that we must have been fantasy booking feuds for them over the years, none of which came to pass. What did we want for them? What did we envision for our beautiful boys?
Just anything emotional ever, I think. And here, even like Dark Order really diminished, like even further than best friends, you know, later. So,
was the feud with Matt Hardy after this? Because, or was that before? Because that was a dark time. After. Okay, that's what that.
Oh my God, the Hardy family.
And it only took place on Dark, and it was like every week we got to see like best friends fight some version of the Hardy
that lasted
office.
For years.
Yeah,
that lasted for years,
time. And then and they got stuck with Jeff Jarrett's faction for a really long time.
Oh my God,
it was all Sanjay and
it was always just matches. Nobody, there wasn't really character movement. There wasn't like promos that went beyond "we're gonna fight those guys." It just, there was just never any like meat to any of it. And we just kept being like, why?
The best friends demonstrate that it can be a very dangerous position to be in, that you are good at doing your job and you're friendly and easy to get along with. And if somebody tells you to lose, you say, okay. Mm-hmm. That is one of the most dangerous places you can be in wrestling. Yeah.
They got to politic more. They got to refuse the job. They got to start throwing temper tantrums unless they get a meaty feud with the Young Bucks, I guess.
I'm sorry if this counts as like cruel and unusual punishment, but I've got another like sort of theory of like when they potentially could have won the titles and had a more featured program. So instead in 2022, instead of Swerve in Our Glory, it becomes them. And they could have even had like a similar program with the Acclaimed where they're leaning more towards that heel side and like putting the Acclaimed down in the way that Swerve did.
Did Best Friends ever feud with the Acclaimed? I don't think so. Did they?
They had like an individual match.
Wow.
In the Acclaimed's early run where they beat them.
Oh.
Well, Sam, I would like to see that.
Yeah, that would be fun. I don't begrudge Swerve anything, but that would have been a nice place for Best Friends.
I wouldn't want to disrupt Swerve's like, you know, perfect ascension into the top of the card, but I'd love to see what the Best Friends could have done.
You know, Dustin, come back. Dustin, you can still come back.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Look, that sort of winds up all of the questions that I had for you guys.
Can I just pause really quickly?
Yeah.
Because I know that you said, like, there's nothing else to say about Kip after that. But actually, there is something that we have to say about Kip and Leah. I think it's... I think it's your point to make, and I'm sorry to make us double back, Sam, but I've really got to get this on the record.
Go for it.
Sam, we realized when we were watching this is that the last time that Kip really was alive, like had joie de vivre, was when he was firmly under the thumb of a strong, forceful, powerful man.
Miss Miro.
It's kind of all adding up now that's like, yes, of course he's in Christian's faction. He needed to be under the control of a man.
This is long-term storytelling. This is consistent characterization. Yes. Kip wants a powerful and sexually confusing male figure to have control of him in some way. Yeah. And he wants to own that power, be owned by that power. And he was wandering in the wilderness for a long time.
Long time.
And then that's why he thought, I got to get on Christian's radar. I know he can handle me.
Yeah. Yeah. He had to pull Christian's pigtails until Christian paid attention. Now it's paying off in spades.
Paying off in spades.
He looked around and he said, who's the most powerful patriarch on this roster? And then he just had to start stealing his pen, trying to get some attention.
Classic flirtation.
Daddy, I've been a bad boy. Sam, was this
Well, he was so confused. He was so confused after, look, to add to that, I love that idea. Like, to add to that, like, he was so confused after Miro let him go that he, like, wore a bag on his head around. He was so ashamed
of who
he was. Trying to get, you know, I guess he saw Pac as, like, a potential authoritarian figure that could, you know, have this kind of relationship with him at some point. But
I think he but it's like that was never going to work out because Pac is kind of an alien creature and he needs someone who can feel a very human kind of like be ashamed of him or be angry at him, or like he needs those vile emotions.
But it does make sense that he like glommed onto Pac for a time to try to make it work.
If we lived in a just world, we could just pull up the BTE episodes that just have Kip wandering through the backstage going, are you my daddy?
Yeah.
I want to see that with Eddie Kingston, just to see what Eddie says.
Yeah.
I'd watch hours of it. Yeah.
Look, I'm glad you brought that up because it's exactly the reason I got you guys on here. The reason I wanted to kick the year off with you guys. Because wrestling is fun and it should be fun.
And we make sure it is.
Yeah, look, as I said at the start, I really appreciate the time you guys have given us. Thank you for coming on here. It's been a blast talking about this match with you. Is there anything you'd like to say about it before we go? Or if not, where can the people find you?
Well, I'll just say best friends forever.
Yeah. Yeah, this being on this episode has been a blast. It might have also sent us into a little bit of a depression, yeah. But we've
a little psychic damage. We're going to be reckoning with what we've lost. But you can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Twitch, all at Tunnel Talk Pod, Blue Sky at Tunnel Talk Pod, Gmail, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Basically, if you want to try and find us somewhere, I'd try Tunnel Talk Pod, and you know, yeah. We could be there.
Whisper it into a mossy stump, yeah. You'll find us.
Yeah, and you can find us on all your podcasting apps, applications. You can find us there too.
Indeed. And if you want to talk to any of us, you can find the Social Suplex Discord is a great place to do that. Jump into the Tunnel Talk thread or jump into the AEW Match Guide thread. You can find us all on there pretty regularly. Reach out to us. Let us know what your memories of this match are. Let us know what you think of our fantasy booking of Kip Sabian. I'd love to hear what other people think, how they can, you know, wrench the best friends into a tag team title run at some point in AEW's history without disturbing, you know, the fabric of what we built too much. And you can find me on Twitter as well at Sir_Samuel, also on Blue Sky as that. And next week, I'll be back with another episode. I'm talking about Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson from Revolution 2024 with Joseph Montecelio. So I'm really looking forward to that. Thanks again for jumping on with me, Leah, Anne, and Ali. It was a blast having you on. It's been great having you here on the network for the past year and a bit now. And I really enjoy listening to your podcast. If you haven't listened to Tunnel Talk, give it a listen. And I hope I haven't caused the end of your podcast by giving you depression or something. And that would be like an over-eager rookie, like accidentally injuring the main event star of a promotion.
We'll see how it plays
Jeremy
out.
Jeremy, never
over
have
the,
me back.
We'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks, but hopefully you're safe. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Indeed. And thank you for listening, everyone. I look forward to seeing you again in a fortnight's time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the AEW Match Guide podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice so you never miss an episode. Also, feel free to let me know on Twitter at Sir_Samuel. I'd love to hear from you. The AEW Match Guide podcast is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network, where you can find many other fantastic podcasts discussing not just AEW, but all parts of the world of professional wrestling. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Sam Brown.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.88 each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.